So if you drive a dollar of additional revenue to an organization, how much of that flows through to the bottom line? Small percentage, 10, 20%. If you save money in non-core expense areas, that flows typically 100% to the bottom line. So if you save a dollar, you typically have to make 4-5 times that amount to flow the same amount to the bottom line by revenue generation. If you're missing the boat in cost savings, you're missing a way to really drive profitability, net operating income, really important aspect of the business.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Mike Roberts. He has 20 years of top shelf, like a margarita, of P&L management and oversight. He's provided a unique perspective on running efficient, high-margin, profitable business units. Many business owners and C-suite execs in the small to mid-market space simply lack the time, the resources, and perhaps the expertise to pursue impactful savings and efficiencies through non-core areas of their business. And this is what he does with the Era Group. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Kenny. Great introduction. I appreciate that.
Thanks. I like to add some energy to it. It just really build it all up and create tension that you have to live up to. Mike, what is on your mind?
Yeah, I was excited to join today and just kind of have a chance to share a little bit about what we do with all of your listeners. And, you know, I think there's a lot of value there, right? Mm-hmm. When it comes to, we all have heard a lot of conversation about tariffs, heard a lot of conversation about profit margin shrinking, inflation, right? So I think it speaks to so many relevant things right now. So I was excited to dive in.
Yeah. And one of the things that when we first got introduced that struck me was just y'all's a couple of things. One, your focus, just like looking at where organizations, including nonprofits, because I do a lot of work with nonprofits. So I was curious about that. But like, where are we just losing money? Because so often we can't control the top line of revenue or donations, but expenses usually are, we have a lot more agency over what those are, or how big they are, or how much they're taking from us, or their impact. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what is that unique focus that all of you at the Era Group have, and why is it different from how other people are thinking about controlling costs and profits?
Yeah, that's a great segue. You know, I think going back to your initial point there between top line revenue and expenses, right? Mm-hmm. So the answer ideally is always both, right? Right. So you should always be looking to drive revenue, and you should always be looking to control costs by doing those two things simultaneously, continuously. You have the best profit margin available, right? But what do people do in reality, right? Now we're focusing on revenue generation. Times get tough. They switch to a cost focus, right? And there's very rarely that dual strategy that's happening simultaneously all the time. But what I want to point out is that the impact of top line revenue versus the impact of cost savings in non-core areas, right? So mm-hmm. if you drive a dollar of additional revenue to an organization, mm-hmm. how much of that flows through to the bottom line? Many times, small percentage, 10, 20%, right? If you save money in non-core expense areas, right? So supplier-based expenditures, that flows typically 100% to the bottom line, right? So if you save a dollar, you typically have to make 4-5 times that amount to flow the same amount to the bottom line by revenue generation, right? So if you're missing the boat in cost savings, you're missing a way to really drive profitability, net operating income, really important aspects to your business. So that's kind of what I wanted to speak to there.
Yeah. So that's wild that, you know, because I want to maybe get into like focus and where we apply energy, especially when we think of when people start thinking of costs or expenditures, payroll, typically largest one on anybody's P&L or balance sheet. And when people start looking at that, it's like, well, how many people do we have and how much do we pay them? But a lot of that has to do with, well, what's the return we're getting on these salaries? And so much of that comes down to leaders being able to clearly articulate where should your focus be? What are we paying attention to? Where are we applying the energy of the organization? We have this collective energy of all these people who are showing up to work, you know, virtually or in an office. And we could either get a little bit back, or for the same amount of energy applied, it sounds like we could get like 4 or 5 times the amount back if we start pointing that energy in a different direction. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. And you know, another way of looking at the value there is, right, with someone like, and this is by no means, I'm not here to pitch Eric or, right, or what we do, but what's important about what a cost consultant like our group does is there's no use of internal resources, right? So you have your core team, right? Your payroll dollars that are focused on the everyday initiatives, they're the operations, right? Scaling the business, whatever they're focused on. And then when you bring in a third party to do something like cost consulting, they're doing all that work beside your team, right? So you've freed up your internal resources, you're getting cost savings. So that's where the benefits start to compound, right?
Gotcha. Like, I mean, not that you and I do the exact same thing. I think we have complementary skill sets or businesses, but I get some of the same stuff to where I become a third party. I'm not beholden to the culture, the ways we've always done things. I don't have any of those burdens. And sometimes I think this is probably a tough part of what you and your team do is really you're holding up a mirror and saying, like, is this really the best way? Does this align with who you say you are, what you want to do, what your goals are? And it's hard to do that inside. A friend of mine uses this quite repeatedly. I borrow it from time to time, but it's really tough to read the label from inside the jar. But if we have an outside consultant who's showing us these things, but also just if we can start to change how people think about, can I just chase more? I think that's what Jim Collins said led to the downfall of many companies. And I've forgotten which book, but it was like the undisciplined pursuit of more. It's just chasing more revenue, more donations, more this, bigger, 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 instead of, and that's fine. You want, like you said, a both and. But if we have to pick one, the return on our thinking of like, how could we do this more efficiently? Like, we've gotten to a certain size. Maybe we need to make it better before we make it bigger.
Or just make sure there's processes in place. Because what we see is many times there's no organization where we come into an organization and we say, okay, let me see your contracts for various suppliers. And no one even has any idea where contracts are. Right. So if no one has any idea where contracts are, what's happening when we're getting invoices on a monthly basis? Right. How do we audit the invoices and make sure the invoices are matching contractual terms if we don't even know where contracts are? Right. So then what happens is you have leakage. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't know the terms of the contract. We're not renegotiating them. They're auto renewing at a 5, 7, 10% increase every year. So, hey, maybe you did a great job back when you started this agreement.
Yeah.
But over time, you get out of line with the market and invoices are getting paid by accounts payable with just whatever comes across their desk gets paid and there's no audit happening. So those two things combined lead to significant leakage. We see about 20 to 30% in organizations just from those two areas that tend to go on autopilot without really any process. And this is small and mid-sized businesses. I'd say 5, 10 million on the low end to about 250 million, right? We see this consistently.
And percentages, like someone may be listening in here, like 10, 20%. They're like, yeah, those aren't giant numbers. But could you ground what those percentages mean in real terms, like in that 5 to 250? Like,
yeah,
what does that mean in real dollars and cents for an organization? Because I think that may drive it home.
Yeah. So if you just, let's look at a small organization, a $10 million organization. So what we see consistently is 20% of top line revenue is reviewable, right? Mm-hmm. So about $2 million on a $10 million organization is reviewable spend. So supplier-based expenditures, non-core reviewable spend, these kind of things, supplier-based contracts, repeatable services, right? Of that 20%, of that $2 million, we see savings of about 20% on that 20% reviewable spend. So, right, so that's $400,000 out of $10 million in a $10 million organization, right? So if you think that what the profit margin would be in a $10 million organization, probably in the million range, right, Jimmy? So if you were to add $400,000 to that profit margin, right, and just bottom line increase, what's the impact of that? And that scales up. Yes. So if you go to a $100 million organization, that's $4 million, right? You go to $200 million, that's $8 million, right? So that's about what we see.
Which is insane if you think about it, because oftentimes when we think about like bolstering our profit margin year over year, quarter over quarter, or anything like that, is we're thinking of like, how much more do we need to do to reach some sort of like terminal velocity of like, okay, now we've hit this and now we get economies of scale and we get all these things that it's going to take all this like Herculean effort to reach some mile marker to where we do start to realize this profit. But literally they could not do a whole lot different and still net out after an audit and a update of these processes and renegotiations, that they don't have to like kill themselves in pursuit of some sort of profit margin. It's sort of the classic work smarter, not harder. Now, I believe in both, but
right. Yeah, I think that's well said, Kenny. And the answer is both, right? Do both. Focus on strategically growing your business and driving revenue in the right way, right? In a methodical and strategic way. And also simultaneously look at running an efficient organization.
Right. Now, when you were describing a lot of things happened over the course of time, right? Like it sounds like ignorance is bliss, but could also be damaging. We started out with a good contract, but then over the course of time, just, you know, the auto renewals and the different things. What is the current thinking, maybe the prevailing wisdom for these business owners, or maybe even the leadership teams? Because, you know, you start getting up 10, 20, 30 million, you might have a fractional or part-time or full-time CFO, or you might even have retained legal counsel or somebody who looks over contract negotiations and things like that. What is the thinking that makes what the Era Group necessary? Because anytime I start to see a business pop up with a unique approach to things, it lets me know that there's a way of doing business that isn't commonly held that makes what they do necessary. So what is the thinking in the marketplace that makes what the Era Group does necessary? Because it's not just it's not just what we're doing, but there's a mental framework, a model or an approach that people are embracing that makes what you do so valuable and needed.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, Kenny. And I think the value proposition is what spoke to me from the moment I joined Era Group. So the value proposition is strictly, we come in, do the heavy lifting. Your team focuses on what you need to do internally, on your priorities. We focus on reducing your supplier-based expenditures, right? We save on average 20%. We share whatever savings we deliver. So we're 50-50 partners essentially with our clients, right? Whatever we save, the savings we deliver, they get the same return on the savings that we get, right? So we have the same interest as our clients, right? And we share that over 36 months. So that's a unique framework to a consulting engagement. There's no fixed fee. Yeah. There's no high level rate to get us started, right? And then we give you a manual and say, here's how you deliver savings. And we say, good luck, right? Now we identify the savings, we implement the savings, and then we monitor the savings to make sure they're actualized, right? Over the monitoring period and share 50-50. So that's unique. And then the second part of the value proposition is if we explore cost savings, we find your organization is doing a great job, we simply just validate it and there's no fee for our work. So there's two outcomes to our engagement. Savings that we share over a 36-month period, or a validation to let you know how great you're doing in an individual area with no fee, right? So I think that value proposition is really unique and there's really no downside. I think that's what speaks to organizations.
Gotcha. And which is, I mean, unique amongst any, you know, coach, consultant, advisor, people that, you know, we all get lumped together in some way, but that really is a unique, it removes that, the typical, like you said, that high priced fee to get started, that is a barrier to entry and to get help. So it really does give off a sort of like a help first mentality or culture from what you're doing. But I guess maybe on my previous question of getting into how are people getting themselves into this? Is it simply just the busyness of business? Is it a false belief that just autopilot in some areas is good? You've used the term non-core, and I'd love for you to just maybe more specifically define that for people. But what is it that is, again, leading to, oh, I need a different way, and that different way sounds like the Era Group and their approach. What's getting people into the trouble where they do need you? Like, is beyond just the actions, like what's the mentality?
Yeah.
That leads to,
yeah, I get it. Yeah. So we look at costs in two different ways, right? So there's direct costs, and what would direct costs be? It would be your labor. It would be, you know, if you're a manufacturer, any direct materials, right? So let's say you need to purchase steel and your primary component in your manufacturing process is steel. Well, most likely you're going to be better procuring that steel than someone else would be because that's your core business, right? So there's your direct costs in those areas. And then there's your indirect costs, right? And those are ancillary services that are provided or needed within your business. It could be waste services. It could be telephone. It could be IT. It could be insurance. It could be supplies, consumables. It could be MRO, right? There's any number of indirect costs in the business, unique to whatever your business is, right?
Right.
And you may be familiar with the Pareto principle, right? So mm-hmm. The 80-20 yeah. rule. So 80% of your expenses as a business are likely your direct expenses, right? So they're the big expenses within an organization. Yeah. Organizations generally do a pretty good job in those areas, right? Because they're in front of your face. They're the largest line items on the P&L. They're monitoring them and they're moving the needle on those. And then there's the 20% of your business expenses, which are typically indirect, that don't get focused on, right? And although the summation of them is significant, individually, there's 80% of your suppliers in that 20% of expense line item, right? Wow. So in your top 80% of expenses, you have 20% or less of your suppliers. In your bottom 20%, you have 80% or more of as far as volume. Right. So that's why this gets overlooked, because it's a lot more difficult to move the needle in your indirect expense areas than it is in your direct expense areas. Right. So that's the reason I'd say
that makes a lot of sense. And it reminds me of just because I do end up talking with a lot of founders in particular of my clients and other people is they'll say all the time, like, I didn't get into business to manage my IT and all the administrative stuff. Like when we're building an org chart, we're looking at like, yeah, sales and marketing, of course, delivery and services. Yeah, of course, we gotta deliver on what we just sold. And then it's like junk drawer of administrative, HR, legal, finance, like the backbone of what makes the business run. And it is sort of like it could be, or insurance too is in there, but like because I used to sell that, and we used to refer to it as like, it's a necessary evil. It's all the stuff you have to have, but it's not the thing anybody went into business to do. Nobody said, man, I just really want to think about my office lease and furniture costs and what kind of chairs we were buying. Like nobody does that. They're buying steel and they're making stuff and they're reselling it. And they know that aspect, like you said, the direct sides of their business. I would talk to when I was running an agency, I would talk to other owners that they're like, man, I'm just like, I can build websites in my sleep. I can create great marketing copy, do all this, but I got to pay taxes and I've got to, you know, I got some of these contractors that I got to sub out to. I've got, you know, all these, you know, I got to buy computers and then there's software subscriptions. It's like, it's death by a thousand cuts. And it sounds like what you're doing is saying, hey, like we got some Band-Aids for all these cuts to at least make them not sting quite so much.
Yeah. Let us focus on the areas that you don't have time to focus on.
and probably don't really derive joy from.
I think you're right.
Now, when does it make sense to, because I talk to a lot of fractional people and other consultants, and depending on the size of your organization, like, when does it make sense to have somebody really own this separately from, say, like the owner or founder or whatever, CEO, like to own looking at all of these things and staying on top of it versus, you know what, just periodically, we need to have someone like the Error Group come in, take a look, that we need to have an engagement or get a fractional or something like that. Like, what's right during the life cycle stages of, you know, whether it's for profit or nonprofit?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think generally what we see is once an organization gets to 150, 200, 250 million, there's generally internal resources. The finance team is sophisticated enough that they can do what we do internally. But from 5 to 10 million up to 100, 150 million, we generally see that if they're not working with someone like Error Group, this area of the business gets overlooked.
Gotcha. And are you usually working with, say, whoever the most senior executive is, or do they maybe have someone who's sort of like part-time paying attention to this side of the business? What's that configuration look like for you?
Yeah, generally it's two scenarios. It's either the business owner or CEO brings us in, mm-hmm. or the CFO, right? And invariably in either situation, if there is a CFO, we end up with the CFO.
Gotcha. That would make a lot of sense. Now, you've mentioned like the three-phase approach that y'all take, and you sort of have like this trailing like 36 months, like make sure not just that, hey, we got the savings, but we kept the savings.
Right.
Which I think is huge, is like, can your work outlast even potentially your engagement? Because certainly expenses change, needs change, markets change. Like right now, like you mentioned, tariffs are in play for a lot of people. AI, you know, you read a new article every other week about how AI is taking jobs or replacing this or whatnot. So we gotta stay nimble as businesses, but it's been that way since the beginning of time.
Sure.
You know, something's always upset the apple cart. But what have you seen in your experience that allows companies to, like, they engage with you, maybe they benefited, they had the trailing 36 months or so, like what allows them to maybe just change the culture of how they view these non-core expenses so that it's not just, hey, we had a great engagement with the Error Group and now we're going to go and screw it up again for 36 more months and then we're going to bring it, like that yo-yo cycle that can happen when you bring in an outside provider and you feel good for a little bit and then as soon as they're gone, you're like, it's like you got hit in the head with a frying pan on a cartoon and you totally forgot everything that just happened. So what are good companies doing to institutionalize these better ways of operating?
Yeah. So we generally see a few different scenarios. So one is, you know, part of our, we think, responsibility when we're engaged and when we're going through that post-implementation phase where we're gathering invoices, we're monitoring, we're making sure they're aligned with the contract and the savings that we expected. Hey, Kenny, we're going to save you $100,000 is actualized, right? Mm-hmm. Part of that is a knowledge transfer from us to the key stakeholders of what we're doing, right? And then through that process and through that knowledge transfer, they're better equipped to carry the monitoring and the savings realization on post-implementation with the ERA, right? So that's the goal. Now, some organizations are going to say, you know what? We don't want to take this on, regardless of if there's knowledge transfer or not. This is not an important priority for us, right? We see the savings, that's valuable, but we don't want to do this. This is something that in perpetuity, we want the ERA to take on for us, right? That happens a considerable amount of time where after our 36 month period, they'll pay us a fee and we just stay on in perpetuity, right?
Monitor. Gotcha.
Right. So that also happens. And then sometimes the third scenario is we'll get done our engagement. They'll wait 3 years and they come back and we do it again. Right.
We need a tune-up. Like, hey, we expanded and then we contract, which, I mean, to some extent happens just by virtue of growth and experimentation. Like, I'm evaluating some of those things right now in my own business as I've taken on more clients, and I'm thinking about the marketing and lead acquisition and what software subscriptions do I want to add, and where do I have overlap, and how. So it's like, I'm looking at expanding, but like, how do I do it without bloating the tech stack? Because inevitably, and I'm guilty of this because I get shiny object syndrome, and I'm sure you've met a lot of founders and owners with shiny object syndrome. Like, this sounds like a great thing. Or my CEO peer group, everybody was buying this software. And they said it was great. Right. You sign up for this massive implementation. You're doing all these things. And then you're like, I don't know if this is helping us as much as I thought it would. Let's slim it down. And then you're like, yes, I'm on the straight and narrow. And then inevitably you start to drift and you're adding features or add-ons and other subscriptions. So it sounds like there are some people who are given to that. And it's just like how much they bloat. Now that I'm thinking about it, I may need to talk to you separately away from this to make sure I'm not going into a ditch here soon.
Sure.
Yep. So yep. I love that you talked about knowledge transfer. I was literally just on a client call before a coaching call in particular with someone she stepped into the COO role, and we're talking about what that means and what that looks like. And, some of it is about not just, hey, here's some tools, and I got tools for days. You know, I'm a nerd on these sort of things. But it's really about, but one of the things we talked about is like, I don't ever want to create a dependency on me to explain things to the whole company. I will help, I will facilitate, maybe I'll be a catalyst, but I need them to internalize some of these tools and frameworks and ways of operating so that even if I'm not around or I get hit by a bus or whatever it is, that continues. Talk a little bit about like, what are those like maybe top two or three things that when you're thinking of this is where the knowledge transfer or just a mental model needs to shift that you find has been most helpful to your clients?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. I think it's very specific to the category and to the project, right? Okay. So let's take a freight project for example, right? There's a unique set of factors that the freight team, the operations manager, who's ever in charge of shipping for that organization is going to need to look at, right? And there's various things you can do, right? You can look at changing your packaging, right? You can look at it, switching things from less than truckload to small package freight, right? If mm-hmm. you're doing small package freight through FedEx or UPS, can you go U.S. Postal Service, right? So there's unique set of circumstances that you can do for each category. So it's not always one size fits all, but the other thing that we teach our stakeholders to do in their specific categories is we teach them what they can actually move the needle on. What items are negotiable, right? And what we also bring to the table is, hey, so we've been doing this for 30 years since 1992, 33 years at this point, right? So we have 40,000 successful projects of benchmark data. So that's the other real value here. So we can come in and say, hey, Kenny, here's what a benchmark rate is for this consumable supply, for this, right? And we can give them some starting points so they know, right, if they do want to go to market or go to RFP themselves post ERA, right, here's what the market should provide, right? Mm-hmm. Here's items within your contract that you can negotiate. You can negotiate your price escalations. You can negotiate, you can remove auto renews, right? So if you don't have to track 50,000 contracts on when they, and that's how they get you, right? So you're not monitoring your contract, they auto renew at a higher price escalation. Next thing you know, your 20% increase over 3 years. Well, this can be mitigated through effective contract management, right? So we're doing some knowledge transfer here to help them effectively manage their suppliers.
Gotcha. Yeah. Installing some processes that'll keep them healthier, checks and balances. But also the thing that struck me in what you just said was helping them understand what things they actually can move the needle on.
Right.
Because it sounds like you're helping people that they don't know what they don't know.
That's right.
Right. Like, oh, I didn't know that I could negotiate that or that was optional or something like that. Again, just the inexperience of like that it wasn't my core competency.
That's right.
It was on the direct things, not the indirect things. But again, y'all have, you know, like you said, 33 years of 40,000 projects. Like, you know, like, no, this can be, you have agency here.
Hey, we have seasonality to our waste removal, right? In the summer months, we have less waste, but we pay the same amount for our 20-yard dumpsters. Well, did you know you could put one of those dumpsters on vacation? It can stay on your lot and you can take 3-4 months and not pay a fee for that dumpster, even though you just need it September through May, right? Oh, no, I never knew that, right? That can translate to, it's those kind of things that individual specialists in that category, that's all they do is waste 365 days a year, can quickly share with you, right? So it's those kind of things, right?
Gotcha. Yeah, it's again, it's death by 1,000 cuts, but maybe we could make it 500 cuts.
That's right. Right.
I don't know if that'll sell, but Mike, this has been really, really helpful. And I think you've given leaders a lot to think about, and hopefully their wheels are spinning like mine are. But let's say somebody's listening to this. They're like, oh my gosh, like we need to do something. I've been feeling the strain of this. Maybe it is tariffs. Maybe it is labor. Maybe it's something else. If somebody wanted to take a baby step towards better cost management, cost control, improving that, what's a baby step they could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to just make some progress there?
I would run, the first thing I would do is run a 12-month accounts payable by supplier report. Hmm. That's all. Run that report, sit down, do a quick pivot table, right? Highlight the entire data, table, pivot table, search by supplier and total amount for the month. And just get familiarized with what suppliers you are paying what on an annual basis. How much and what suppliers, and work top to bottom. And get familiar with that, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I would do, start there. And then if you start at the top of the list, when's the last time we revisited these agreements? When's the last time we reached out to the top 5 or 10 suppliers, and is our contract out of whack, right? Do we have valid contracts in place, right? Are we going month to month, right? The most expensive way to manage a vendor is month to month or year to year, right? The longer your contract cycle would be, the more leverage you have to get better pricing, right? So
sure,
just looking at your suppliers a little bit differently in that way.
Gotcha. That's really helpful. And so let's say somebody does that, and or maybe they're like, you know what, I just listening to this, I hear it's important, but it's making my teeth itch. If somebody wanted to know more about you and the Era Group and said, hey, this is just not a project I want to take on, I like what you said, I want to focus on the things I'm good at. If somebody wanted to know more or just had some follow-up questions maybe for you, where would you send them?
Yeah, I would look at our website. Our website's a great place to just kind of check us out, see what we're doing. And there's some great case studies, which you can go on that. So look at ERA Group US, just Google that, you know, our website will come up for you. That's a great place to start if you want to look at some resources. And my email is mroberts@eragroup.com. You know, send me an email. And even if it's just some few basic questions, if you don't actually want an engagement, if you just want to have a conversation, let's have it. Or if you just want an analysis of your organization for no fee, and we can say, okay, here's where we think you should focus your efforts on. And whether that's you that focuses in those areas or us, it's irrelevant to us, but we can produce that for you anytime, with no commitment or fee. So I think those are all great ways to learn more.
Excellent. And we'll link up the website down in the show notes, as well as your LinkedIn profile and email, so that way people can connect with you or maybe just follow along with any of the content that you're sharing out.
Appreciate that.
Thank you so much. This was really, really helpful. So I know this is going to help a ton of people as well. Listeners, thank you so much for spending part of your day with me and Mike. Hopefully by now, if you've been a listener for a little while, you know my goal is just to have great, impactful conversations that help you think differently about your organization, your leadership, maybe even your life. If we get real deep off into it, maybe you're thinking about auditing your budget now, which is probably what all of us should be going to, your personal budget. But thank you so much. It means a lot. If you would like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice, I would greatly appreciate it. And leave me a comment. Let me know, what do you find helpful? What do you find not helpful? Look, I enjoy having these conversations. solutions, but ultimately I need them to provide value for you. That's my goal. That's my aim. And so your input, your feedback will help me do just that. You can also reach out to me, Kenny at KennyLang.com. If you'd rather just directly email me or reach out on LinkedIn, I'm usually hanging out there. But until next time, change the way you think.